You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
The Paranormal News Insider from ParanewsInsider.com. Produced by WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of March 28th, 2017, and episode number 308. And this is your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And before I get started, I want to thank Eric Altman for having me on his radio show, Beyond the Edge Radio, last Sunday night. And it was co-host Marie for the great questions. I'm jealous of her living in Seattle, by the way. And I had a lot of fun on the show. It was a blast. And he's, I don't know if you know this, but Eric Altman is also the host of this little shindig going on next month called the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure. Have you heard about this? Well, we'll talk about that here in a second. Tonight, holy smokes, I don't know what's going on. There's something is in the air. I don't know if it's springtime or cabin fever or what's going on. But tonight, we have almost double the amount of stories that we would normally have. And we're going to top it off with that giant chicken. We're going to talk about him. Not a lot, just a little. Want to mention him because he's cool. I want one. We'll also talk about that Bigfoot causing a car accident. Mountain lion invades Ontario. Wild pygmy man or orang pendek. Have you seen this one? Caught on video. We'll also talk about In Search of the Thylacine. The rare night parrot is seen again. Huge UFO seen in the Gulf of Mexico, and a ghost filmed in Corpus Christi, which is also in the Gulf of Mexico. Creepy. And are you more prone to ghostly encounters? Part two. Man, that's a continuation of last week's story on that. We'll also talk about the NDE experiencer who shows off her superpowers on daytime TV. Incredible stuff here. Wow, you're not going to believe this one. And scientists are baffled in Argentina. I love that word, baffled. They're baffled in Argentina over crop circles, and a UFO expert weighs in. And if that's not enough, if I have time here, I mean, I do have bedtime coming up here. We'll also have the book of the week. So I hope you brought your sleeping bags and your pillows, kids, because it's going to be a long and dark and stormy night here on the Paranormal News Insider. Lots of stuff coming up. And this week's news is brought to you by Thomas Francis University. Thomas Francis University is a metaphysics school that offers online spiritually based bachelor's, master's, and PhD doctoral metaphysical degrees, as well as single standalone courses in related metaphysical and esoteric topics. Instructors are easily accessible and offer world-class customer service and instruction. TFU and other ICMH schools have hundreds of students and graduates in more than 50 countries worldwide. And for more information on Thomas Francis University, please visit tfuniversity.org. Yes. Well, and in case you missed it, I know I did. I was a little tired Monday night after being up pretty late on Sunday night. I got to get my beauty sleep. I never seem to get enough. I got to face radio. Monday night was the Crypto Kid radio show, hosted by Colin Schneider, and he had an awesome guest on. Ronald Murphy was the guest on Monday night, author of a couple of books that I've talked about here on the Paranormal News Insider, On Dogman and On Wild Man, and his latest book, On Werewolf, just came out. So if you missed it, like I did, you can catch up on the archives. And tomorrow night, yeah, we got Kat Hobson. We'll talk about her guests at the halfway point. That's going to be a creepy show, but I might tune in for that one. Some anomalous notes here. As always, the events listing is updated. A couple of events going on this weekend. Why not? I'll just throw these out here. Phenom Family Reunion takes place this weekend, March 31st through April 2nd in York, Pennsylvania. The Oregon Ghost Conference, March 31st through April 2nd. Seaside Light Expo this weekend in Cleveland, Ohio. It's right down the road from me. And that looks like that's it as far as this weekend is concerned. And if you have any information about any event and would like to hear it here as well as see it on the website, let me know at insider@paranewsinsider.com. I don't know. Do people still send emails? I don't know. I get occasionally a few every now and again, some great ones and some not so great ones, some grumpy ones, but that's okay. That's what I'm here for. You can also get a hold of me through my website, paranewsinsider.com, or through any social media outlets such as Facebook and Twitter, but not MySpace. I'm not there. You're not going to find me there. And yes, I mentioned it at the top of the show, Eric Altman, host of this year's, well, and last year's, Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure. It's coming up very quickly, May 5th through the 7th in Farmington, Pennsylvania. I will be speaking Steve Coles. I almost said Stan Coles, but it's Stan Gordon. I guess we could stitch them together. That would be scary. Two of those guys. Last year, I got a table in between those two guys, Steve Coles to my left, Stan Gordon to my right. It was awesome. Rosemary Ellen Guiley will also be speaking there. And Ronald Murphy, who was the guest last night on Crypto Kid, he will also be speaking. John Sable Jr., the ghost excavator, will also be speaking, as will Jay Baterchin, who, if you listen to Beyond the Edge Radio on Sunday night, he called in later in the show, and he and I will be dueling Highlander style. I know that it's kind of an old movie. I don't know if you've ever seen that. It's from like 1986. I'm kind of dating myself here. But yeah, we're going to be jousting because there can be only one, as you know, Jay. And we'll see who that is. Trapper John Tice from Mountain Monsters will be back, as well as two other members of Mountain Monsters, Wild Bill Heff and Huckleberry Joe Lott. All this is taking place at Benner's Meadow Run Cabins, and it's 3 days, two nights. It might even be three nights. I got to go home early on Sunday. I got to work on Monday. I got to pay the bills. But a lot of stuff going on. Workshops, the speakers, day and night hikes, cookouts. We're going to be roasting our wieners. It's going to be a lot of fun. Movies, some awesome movies are going to be playing all weekend long. And the best part about all of this is that it's for charity. All the proceeds are going to go to three different charities: Unity, A Journey of Hope, Lucky Paws Animal Rescue, and Fayette Friends of Animals. That's just fantastic that we're helping these local charities. And if you haven't gotten your tickets, you better hurry. Ticket sales end on May 1st. Well, you can buy some at the door, but I wouldn't drive all the way out there to Farmington without a ticket, personally, if I were you. Also going to be there, Butch Witkowski. I forgot to mention him last week. And Lon Strickler, they're going to be hanging out. I know Butch was hanging out last year. A lot of fun catching up with him. The Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure, the adventure of a lifetime. Well, come on. You know I wasn't going to say that. Or wasn't not going to say that, I guess. Yes. It will be intense. Got to say that. And not to outshadow another event that I'll be at a couple of weeks after that, the St. Albans Sanatorium event, May 19th through the 20th in Radford, Virginia. That's called EnigmaCons, and you can find more information at enigmacons.com. Oh, and yeah, I forgot to mention PABigfootCampingAdventure.com for that event if you're still interested. And one other thing I want to mention is that Kitway Man in the Sky, if you've read my blogs or anything, I did write a blog about that, but I've kind of expanded on that, and I wrote a kind of a full article on this, and that's going to be published pretty soon in a little offshoot magazine called Skeptical Briefs. That's a quarterly newsletter published by the Committee for Skeptical Inquiry, CSI. You might have heard of that. It's formerly known as the Committee for the Scientific Investigation of Claims of the Paranormal, or PSYCOP. I know you've heard of that one. yeah, they used to be the enemy to a lot of people in the paranormal, but I don't know. It's good to be recognized by you guys and people that believe in all this stuff, as well as the, you know, that other side, those people that don't want to believe, I guess. But it's a interesting way for me to kind of publish how I go about doing these stories for you guys and how I kind of problem solve my way through that and let people, you know, it's hard to prove to some people that certain paranormal stories are not real. And it's also hard to prove to hardcore skeptics that some of these stories may potentially be real. Some of them just discount them right away. So it's hard to demonstrate to both at the same time. The answers can be found in the paranormal beyond what we believe, whether we believe in it or we believe against it. So with the Kitway article, I essentially discussed my approach to this particular paranormal story. And it's just a way of showing that you can be balanced. You could be in this field, but you can still be balanced-minded and be able to approach this subject objectively. And hopefully I could bring some more people a little bit closer to the middle that are hardcore skeptics. And it's just another way for me to, I don't know, fulfill my dream of being a journalist, I guess. So with that, we have a lot of stuff to cover tonight. So I'm going to just jump into this. And one little story, I don't know, you've probably seen this, that video of that giant chicken. My goodness, it's funny. It's hilarious. And well, that I didn't need to see that. I jumped in the chat room here, and first thing I see is something is running down Dita's leg. I don't know. I'm not going to speculate. Not sure what that is all about. But before they were talking about tossing bras or something. I don't know. It's a little insane in the chat room. So if you're not in the chat room, you are missing some really interesting conversation. And some of it, I think the FCC would be knocking on my door if I repeated anything that was going on in there. But yeah, back to the giant chicken. Yeah, it's actually real. It's not CGI. It's not fake. It's not something out of Star Wars. The chicken is actually a breed known as a Brahma chicken, and they do grow extremely big. And it's no hormones or any kind of steroids or anything like that. It's a cool video. And that's all I have to say. I mean, no need to go on about that. We're going to jump into cryptid news. Now, cryptid news tonight, I have as many articles to talk about in cryptid news that I would normally have to talk about all night long in every category I normally talk about: cryptozoology, UFOs, ghosts, and my other news, which is all kinds of other stuff. But tonight we have something in every single spot. But again, cryptid news, holy smoke, something is going on. I'm not sure what. And let me find an article here. Oh, we'll try this one. I'm going to post this in the chat room so you guys can digest the story as well. Yeah, you might have heard about this one too. Another popular story in the news about this lady who hit a Sasquatch, or she, I don't know, she didn't really hit a Sasquatch. She hit a deer and blamed it on Sasquatch, or blamed it on Bigfoot. I kind of spilled the beans about this story a little early, talked about it on Sunday night during the Beyond the Edge radio with Eric Altman. And I kind of described it as one telltale sign of the existence of animals is the amount of roadkill discovered that are obviously hit by vehicles. And one major argument against, let's say, mountain lions inhabiting the East Coast is the lack of roadkill. And we've all seen those signs with the picture of deer, you know, that black deer that's in like mid-flight, like it's ready to take off like Superman. And that signals where deer cross. And in case you're not aware, deer crossing signs are put up where deer have caused accidents on a frequent basis over time. And usually it's dictated by state by state. And it's usually they go by a 3-year period. Now, it's important because moving the sign is not going to make the deer go somewhere else. Seriously, people believe this, like that the sign is allowing deer to cross at certain places. I know it sounds ridiculous, but yeah, it's true. I got a little audio for that, but we'll play that another night. Actually, I'll probably just put that up during the week for you guys. Now, our first story comes from Idaho. Yep, where they make potatoes. Now, on Wednesday, March 22nd, around 11 o'clock p.m., You got to follow along the time here. This gets pretty intense. A woman was driving along U.S. Highway 95 in her Subaru Forester. I don't know. I guess that's what she drives. On her way to pick up her husband from work. Now, she purportedly saw a 7 to 8 foot tall creature and what she called a shaggy creature. Huh. She must watch Scooby-Doo. Now, it was on the side of the road and it was chasing deer. I don't know how she saw this at night, but okay. Now, as she passed the scene, she looked up in her rearview mirror to get another look when a deer that was purportedly being chased by the 7 to 8 foot tall shaggy creature ran out in front of her car. Well, she hit the deer, which damaged the vehicle, but she was able to continue on her way to pick up her husband from work. And I'm sure he was not very happy. Now, she reported the incident to the state police, the local sheriff's department, and ultimately there was no mention of a Bigfoot in the case file as completed by the local sheriff's department. After she picked up her husband, she went to the sheriff's department, and they actually went out to the scene, and they looked for any sign of this purported creature, and apparently they didn't find any. And I don't even know if they found the deer, for that matter. Yeah, I know when I hit one. I pretty much gave some people some lunch and dinner for the next couple of days. And mine was dead. But no indication here as to what was actually there or if there was any sign of Bigfoot. I'm sure they were not actively looking for one, though. Now, if this story sounds familiar, it might, because this has happened before. Believe it or not, a 17-year-old swerved off the road in Fairfield Township, which is here in Ohio, where I'm at, back in 2014. Reportedly swerved from hitting a 7-foot-tall hairy creature with green glowing eyes. Wow. Now, he stated he sped off because he was frightened and was obviously speeding at the time of the crash, which he was cited for failure to control his vehicle, but not for failing to control his imagination. And the BFRO, which is the Bigfoot Field Researchers Organization, also has a report of a single car accident. The driver stated he was swerving to avoid hitting a Bigfoot in the Big Thicket National Preserve in Texas back in March of 2005. And I guess with all that, I could mention the very sad story in multiple ways of the 44-year-old Montana man who was struck and killed while attempting to scare motorists while dressed as a Bigfoot back in 2012. Well, the recent accident in Idaho involved a 50-year-old woman. And it's weird because there's not really a motive here. There's not a motive to lie or to make up anything. The story is it's a little flaky. If you pull the old CSI and you kind of draw it out and you think about it, you draw a little stick figure for the Bigfoot and little deer. Those little antlers running away, and a car goes by the scene because I'm sure you're traveling more than 15 miles an hour. I'm not sure how the deer got up back out in front of the car, and I'm not sure at night how you're going to be able to see a Bigfoot behind you unless you take your brakes, and then it illuminates pretty well. I don't know. It's just confusing. But again, why would she lie? It's not going to matter on insurance claim or anything like that. And that's a great point here. Always make sure, especially if you live in Pennsylvania, which is where I hit a deer last November, always have some pretty good comprehensive insurance. And it'll come in handy if you do accidentally hit a Bigfoot or a Sasquatch with green glowing eyes or otherwise. Now, in this second story, this is about a mountain lion. And I mentioned a mountain lion in the first story getting struck by vehicles to validate their existence. It's kind of sick when you think about it, but unfortunately that's just kind of one way that scientists gather their data and information. Now, one mountain lion was struck and killed by a vehicle in Missouri earlier this year, and back in 2011, one was struck and killed by a vehicle just outside of Milford, Connecticut, which is about 70 miles northeast of New York City, which is crazy. And there's a book about that then. It's going to eventually be a book of the week here. Now, Mandy Wiest was driving along a dirt road on Saturday, March 25th, northeast of Thunder Bay, Ontario. Now, she saw a van pulled over to the side of the road, and she stopped to see if they were okay. I mean, this is Canada. You know, they do that kind of thing. They're overly nice. They go out of their way to be nice, and it kind of drives you nuts sometimes. Now, to her surprise, the occupants were gawking at a dead creature frozen and partially covered in snow. Now, Mandy is a hunter, and she was a little bit surprised and was very easily recognized as a mountain lion, which had actually had porcupine quills embedded in its shoulder and cheek, and it appeared as though it had become malnourished. Now, while she was unable to keep the animal due to it being an endangered animal in Ontario, she did report it and tied it up on top of her car and took it to where it could be investigated by Ontario's Ministry of Natural Resources. And the ministry stated it was a male, which kind of figured that. And I'll tell you why in a second. That was suffering from severe muscle atrophy, and the cougar's bowels were empty, which indicated that it died of natural causes. It probably starved. It couldn't eat because of the porcupine quills, or it may have had something wrong with it that made it not able to actually hunt the kind of animals that it should instead of chasing after porcupines. And this location is definitely east of the Mississippi River. And if you know anything about the cougar drama, they're not supposed to exist anywhere east of the Mississippi River, with the exception of southern Florida, where the Florida panther thrives and survives. Well, it doesn't really thrive, actually. It's where they're established for the most part, between all the houses and everybody encroaching in their area. But they're slowly making their way east, which is exciting. Now, one question some people may have is this a sign of the elusive eastern cougar, which was declared extinct back in 2011, yet it had actually disappeared quite a long time before that? I want to say 1936 was the last time one was seen. It was shot and killed in Maine. Yay, shot and killed. Yay, let's kill them off. And that was the last time they'd really actually documented one in the wild. Yet it took them that long to officially put the stamp on there and say, well, they're really gone. And that's part of the conspiracy about mountain lions, because why would they wait that long when this was a time when mountain lions were starting to be seen a lot here on the East Coast? And they're essentially displaced mountain lions. I shouldn't say displaced, but they're kind of making their way across the United States. Now, most mountain lions, most meaning pretty much all so far, are wandering males from the Black Hills region of South Dakota, including the two that I mentioned at the beginning of this story. And essentially the reason for that is that they need to expand. They need to have a very large area of roaming for, especially for the males. And that's why we're getting more males here on the East Coast, because they need more land. They have a large range. The females don't have as large of range. So the males are trying to come out here and establish their own ground. And the females, hopefully, will not be too far behind. And once that happens, well, I shouldn't have to explain what happens. I mean, I hope you guys know all the stuff. But, you know, male mountain lions and female mountain lions, they make little baby mountain lions. But then that's great, because then we can hopefully get some established mountain lions. I know some people are not in favor of that, but I can't wait, because that'll naturally cull deer, which will cut down on accidents, and I'm sure the insurance companies will love that as well. And shoot, I don't think I put that in the chat room. Well, we're going to throw this link in the chat room. Interesting story, and there's a lot of photographs on here as well of the poor little frozen mountain lion. Looks like saber-toothed tiger that, you know, they dug up in the Arctic or something. Interesting stuff. Well, love those guys. And it's my dream to actually see one of these in the wild. I've been to southern Florida a few times with the hope that I'll not run one over, but see one at least. That would be great. And I've been to Washington State as well. Hopefully one of these days I'll get to see one of these guys in the wild. Now, speaking of wild, this is another popular story that right now is blowing up on social media. It's still developing. Now, it's been online for about 6 days, but right now it's it's in full swing. It's really starting to take off, and people are really talking about this. And it comes from YouTube. Yeah, I know, YouTube. Not the most trustworthy source of information or trustworthy source of videos of anything, whether it's UFOs, ghosts, or cryptids, which is, we're still on the cryptids. Can you believe it or not? It's almost the bottom of the hour, and we're still on cryptids. And we're only halfway through this, kids. Got a long way to go. Like I said, you got a sleeping bag. You might want to unfurl that thing, untie it, lay it out, and get cozy, because it's going to be a long night tonight. Now, this video is titled Hebo Shocked Someone Naked in Forests of Aceh. Okay. Well, that's Indonesian. It's kind of like loosely translated. Now, this video has received 3.8 million views already as of just a few hours ago when I just last checked it. It's blowing up fast. Now, in the video, a bunch of people are on dirt bikes and are traveling through the forests of the northern part of Sumatra, which is it's an island. It's a really long, huge island in Indonesia, which is a group of large islands which are north of Australia and just south of Asia. So get out your globes and spin them around, and you'll find it. You'll find it. You'll see. Now, one rider is about 20 or so feet behind a couple of other riders, and this person is filming with what appears to be an action cam or some kind of GoPro attached to their helmet, when suddenly the lead rider stops and falls over, with the second bike ending up right behind it. Now, when this third rider with the camera angle stops, catches up, and he stops momentarily, or he or she, I don't know, stops momentarily, they look at the other riders over the left and over the right, and then down, must have kicked it into neutral and then kicked the bike back into gear and takes off in pursuit of something that must have caused the lead rider to panic. Now, you can kind of see this flash of something that pops up in the video. And as the motorbike speeds up, we see this man-like creature holding a stick, which eventually runs around the corner to the right. Now, when the bike turns the corner, we briefly see the bald, short person just before it dies off left, disappears into the bushes. The video uploaded by the YouTube account Fredography on March 22nd. Now, the account shows numerous dirt bike videos of people touring various parts of Sumatra. So it's not a known hoaxer website. It's not a known hoaxer account. It's the only paranormal type thing on this account. And the Daily Mail, The Sun, and a lot of other news websites that love viral videos such as these are calling this a potential lost member of a pygmy tribe. Now, some in the paranormal are speculating that this could be proof of the elusive Orang Pendek. Now, the Orang Pendek is thought to be a small humanoid creature that dwells in the forests of Indonesia. While this was a far-fetched idea maybe a few decades ago, when people kind of started talking about this thing, it's not so far-fetched because scientists have actually found proof of a small hobbit-like hominid in 2003 that are called Homo floresiensis, due to being discovered on Flores Island, which is on the eastern half of Indonesia. So there's a little bit of merit to this. Granted, these were not recent bones. They were around for quite a while, but who knows? There could be descendants out there in the woods. Now, when I first saw this video, I saw it on my phone, and it was kind of hard to see too much in the way of detail. But I'll tell you what, when I got home and I got to see it on my computer, there was something extremely startling. And before I tell you that, I want to let you know that you're tuned in to WCJV Digital Broadcasting from Youngstown, New York, emanating live at WCJVradio.com. And you're listening to the Paranormal News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And I mentioned Crypto Kid radio show. He's on every Monday night, 8 p.m. Eastern. And tomorrow night, Wednesday night, you can catch Paranormal Experienced with host Kat Hobson. And she's going to be talking to Bloody Mary, the voodoo queen of New Orleans. I don't know if I can handle that. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm going to have all the lights on in the house. if I listen to that tomorrow, because and then it's right before I go to bed. Holy smokes, I'm going to be a little nervous. That's Paranormal Experience with host Kat Hobson. Tomorrow night, she's going to have Bloody Mary, the Voodoo Queen of New Orleans. And that's going to be at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central, Wednesday night, right here on WCJRadio.com. Yeah, you see what I did there? I teased that story. I didn't want you to turn the channel. I wanted you to stay right here and find out what I found that was so scary, so disturbing. Well, when I got home, I pulled up this YouTube video on my computer, and I slowed it down, which is a normal procedure. And to be honest with you, I was not really impressed with it. It didn't really seem very legit to me. It seemed a little choppy. It seemed a little, I don't know, just not great. I wasn't really convinced about anything. But then I started to do a little bit more research on some of the other stories that were popping up, and trying to see any other information I could gather. And I stumbled across The Sun, which is not really one I would take too credible anyway. But it actually had a much clearer version of this video. And I'll tell you what, I watched this and I kind of sat back for a second. It's actually very kind of, I want to say, alarming. It's some alarming detail that kind of comes out in this version. And it does look quite convincing. I mean, it truly does look like a bald guy running through the woods with a stick. It does not look fake at all to me. And that's pretty hard for me to admit, you know, because usually I can really easily dismiss these videos. And the original one on YouTube, I don't know why, maybe it's just too compressed or something, but wherever The Sun is getting this, it's not as pixeled. It's a lot more clear or less compressed or something. But I'll tell you, the detail is there. And if this is a fake, you fooled me. And I'm hard to fool because this does look like some guy running around in the woods. And I wasn't so sure. Again, the first time I saw this on YouTube, I wasn't convinced. But man, I'll tell you, there is some detail there that it's really hard to fake. Certain things I'm not going to really mention, but just looking at some of this detail, it's really, really interesting. But as far as it being a Ring pendek, like some of these paranormal websites are claiming, I'm not so sure about that. Looks pretty standard, like a guy to me, not really like somebody that's would be a wild man that would completely be away from human contact. But interestingly, many people in Indonesia, and this is why the headline is what it is, on some of these news stories about a wild pygmy man being found, is that there's this lost tribe, and they're known as the Manti, and the Manti tribe is known in local folklore and urban legends, probably similar to what we think of the Orang Pendek. And some people just think that's completely ridiculous because this Manti tribe is not validated to exist at all. It's like an urban legend. But a lot of people in that region really think that this is what this is. And this could be a really, really interesting story beyond just, what we're talking about here. I mean, this could be, validate a hidden culture, or who knows, maybe even the Orang Pendek. And I'm really hoping that the story is going to continue to develop and more information will come out. Who or what was actually in this video? This is still pretty fresh. It's still pretty new. Granted, it's been almost a week out. But these kind of things, sometimes they do take time. You got to be patient. And I think that I'm going to put that YouTube video in there. And you can see in this version, it's clipped. And that looks pretty darn good. Like a guy with a stick there. And it's kind of hard to fake. I try to look up some videos and some stuff that maybe that was CGI'd in, but when you're zooming in on the pixels, I don't see any trickery, I guess is the word I'm looking for from this. And these people really don't seem to have any reason to do that other than to maybe get attention for their little motorcycle riding club or whatever they're doing there. But man, I'll tell you what, that's probably one of the best videos I've seen of some strange stuff happening in the woods in quite a long time. And so we'll definitely keep an eye on that story. And well, guess who is back in the news again? Well, couldn't go. I don't think we even went a week. The last couple of weeks here. The Tasmanian tiger, or thylacine, is making the rounds in the paranormal news again this week. And this week, it's a very positive thing. Dr. Sandra Abel from James Cook University will be leading a field survey in the Cape York Peninsula area of far north Queensland in Australia. Dr. Abel very recently found only the second surviving population of northern bettongs. Northern bettongs. Okay, you have no idea what that is. You're looking at me like, what? Well, it's a small marsupial. It looks like a little mouse, like a little kangaroo or something. He's cute. If you get past the tail. I don't like the tail thing. Like the rat. I can't do that. She found this, or her team found this, through the use of over 100 sensor cameras. Now, these cameras took over 100,000 pictures, which they had to analyze one by one. That's a job. I would get carpal tunnel. That's a lot of pictures to have to sift through looking for a little marsupial. But it did show signs of the northern bettongs and a pretty darn good picture of one. So will they have the same success with the thylacine? Well, I certainly hope so. This is a pretty good methodology, I think. They're going to try to bait it and then take pictures of these sensor cameras. But they might only have half the chance because the team is only bringing 50 cameras that will be set near bait stations. Now, I'm thinking that this is probably because the thylacine is much larger than the northern bettong, and it will also cut down on the amount of data that the team will have to sift through. But hopefully they're taking this just as serious as they were with the northern bettong, and they are intent on finding it. But this will definitely prove, it won't prove one way or the other unless they do find it. This is a very good area to look at. Cape York, it's pretty remote up in this part, in this region, and it's been the site of a couple of sightings, including the one that we mentioned last week. Last week we talked about, but that one was way back. It was pretty historical, but you never know. I mean, this is a great step, and I'm really excited about this because I think out of all the animals that we have ever talked about in cryptozoology, Loch Ness Monster, Bigfoot, Chupacabra, all these other things, I think that the Tasmanian tiger or thylacine has probably the greatest chance of being discovered. And, you know, that's a pretty darn big animal and a really cool cat. Well, he's not really a cat. He's a marsupial. But that'll be interesting if they can find any evidence of this. I don't think I have a time frame on that, but it should be happening pretty soon. But it will take probably a few weeks to a few months to really get that data sifted through. But if they do actually see one in the wild, we're going to know about it pretty darn quick. And let me find a link here. So if you're in the chat room, you get links to all these stories immediately. So you can sift through them, open in new tabs on your computer or whatever. And at your own leisure, you can look through them. Or if you just want to kick back and listen to the show, close your eyes and listen to me drone you to sleep word by word as you drift off and count sheep, paranormal sheep. That's fine too. And you can catch up on all of these links. I'll put them out there through social media, through Facebook, which is linked up to my Twitter. And you'll get all this information, all these stories, if you haven't seen them. And I try to give some links that you might not normally see, some that are not are typical, the ones that aren't just being shared around town, around Facebook. I try to find a source to some of these stories, or try to find some alternate information. And heck, I even have a story here on that little northern bettong. So if you want to see this cute little cat, well, not cat, but cute little animal, you click on that link there about the northern bettongs. So Tassie, back again. Great. And speaking of animals that are back that we thought we lost, the night parrot. I mentioned this at the beginning of the show. We're going to stay down under for our next story. That was my Australian accent. Not very good, I know. That's okay. This time we're shifting to Western Australia. Now, the night parrot, what a cool name, is discovered in 1845 and then last seen officially in 1912. Poof, gone. Well, it's a bird with green and gold feathers, and you think that would be easy to spot, but he's not. He was thought to become extinct, yet dead specimens actually showed up in 1990 and 1996, and it wasn't until 2013 that a night parrot was seen and actually photographed in the wild. That's wild. Now, the location of this discovery has become a closely guarded secret in an effort to keep the bird away from people wanting to see it and poke it and prod it and catch it and put it in bird cages and hopefully help it come back from the brink of extinction. Now, not only are there a few hundred, very few numbers of this bird, we don't even know how many, but they're also extremely elusive. Now, the night parrot, as its name would indicate, is actually a nocturnal bird, and which means it's mostly active at night. And it's also a ground-dwelling bird that lives in the arid desert regions of Australia, which, again, makes it even harder to find and document. Now, the rediscovery of the night parrot took place in Western Queensland, but now researchers have found signs of the night parrot in Western Australia. And if you're not familiar that much with Australia, I don't blame you. It's a cool country, but I couldn't find my way around without GPS. Now, this is about 2,000 kilometers away, or 1,200 miles away to you and I, from the original discovery, which is kind of mind-bending in a way. This elusive bird is found, again, 1,200 miles away. It hasn't been seen in 4 years, and all of a sudden we find it somewhere else. A group of four bird watchers were able to photograph a night parrot in flight. Now, the sighting was not a complete it wasn't complete chance. They just didn't stumble upon this thing. They did intend to go out into this particular habitat where the night parrot might be found. And the bird was rumored to exist in Western Australia, but no sightings have been substantiated until now. Nigel Jackett, a warden at the Broome Bird Observatory and one of the four men involved in the sighting, stated, quote, "The night before, we actually heard the birds, which sounded very unusual to us, actually. We couldn't sleep. We were just pondering the question, what was making this noise? And there were quite a few of them. There was at least five or six of these things calling around us. So we didn't know what they were, but we saw the habitat was beautiful and thought that they could be night parrots," unquote. Well, the next day, one suddenly burst out of some brush, and one of the members got a clear photograph of the bird in flight. While the distance of the two sightings over the last 3 years is extremely positive, again, 1,200 miles between sightings, it does not mean that the night parrot exists across this whole entire 1,200-mile expanse or that it's been actually fully recovered. Now, this latest sighting is also being kept a secret as to where the exact location is so that the birds will not be bothered. Well, I got to be honest with you. I don't think I've ever heard of the night parrot. If I have, it's been buried deep down inside. But it's a cool-looking bird, and it's weird, too. I mentioned on the show Sunday night, Beyond the Edge Radio, when I was a guest with Eric Altman and Marie. This thing just burst out of the brush, and a guy just swung his camera up and took a clear photograph of this thing flying away. But, you know, Bigfoot, we can't get a clear picture. I know, it's a totally different concept, totally different story. UFOs can't get a clear picture. I don't know. It's just kind of funny, I think. But, these guys were bird watchers. They were all armed with cameras and different equipment ready for this. So they were at the ready. So I guess it's not completely without surprise. And I can't remember. Speaking of surprise, I don't know if I put the link in there for the guy. Yeah, I did. Nope. No, I didn't. Maybe I didn't. Okay, so we're going to put that in there. So you guys can check out The Night Parrot. Sounds cool. Maybe he should have his own TV show, The Night Parrot. I don't know. Sounds like a Marvel kind of thing. All right, so that's your cryptid news. Holy smokes, 45 minutes of cryptid news. Well, hopefully Eric will like that, and our very own crypto kid, Colin Schneider, will like that. Great cryptid news, but now we're going to go to the skies and some UFO news, an interesting story that's making its rounds in social media right now as well. And it comes from us from last Tuesday. There was a sighting of an extremely large UFO in the Gulf of Mexico. Now, the crew member of an offshore supply vessel reported his sighting, which included some other crewmen, to the National UFO Reporting Center, which is known as New Fork. Now, New Fork is looking for more witnesses to this UFO sighting that occurred 80 miles southeast of New Orleans, Louisiana. Now, the case report states, quote, close to 7 p.m. on March 1st, just before dusk, myself and four other crew members of our vessel saw a craft that was 5 times our 240-foot vessel in length. That's huge. My line of sight was about a quarter of a mile from our vessel. There was a rig behind the craft about a half mile. I used this to help gauge the size of the craft. Sighting was approximately 80 miles southeast of New Orleans, Louisiana. The scene lasted about 40 seconds. The craft rose up out of the water, which again is the Gulf of Mexico, about 40 feet. And the interesting thing here is no water was dripping from the craft. Within a split second, the craft disappeared at a 30-degree angle into the sky. Speed appeared to be faster than the speed of a light being turned on in a room, which would be like the speed of light. Okay. Well, within seconds, it had disappeared completely. I can say for sure that the craft was dark-colored, oval in shape, and made no sound whatsoever. With as many rings, too, as there has to be more witnesses than just the four on our vessel, unquote. Well, I don't know what to say about that. I mean, the interesting thing, again, is that they saw this thing come out of the water, and no water coming off the craft. And then it just zoomed up in the sky. Interesting. 40 seconds is a long time for all that to happen. And if this craft came out of the water, it says a split second, the craft disappeared. I mean, I don't know if 40 seconds is right. And when you kind of like visualize this, and again, play CSI, and kind of think about the timing here and everything. Granted, people, you know, people make horrible witnesses to events like this, and trying to put things together, there's usually more questions than answers. But again, this is something that's still fairly new, and hopefully New Fork can find more witnesses, or more of these people can come forward, and we can get more information and a little bit more objectivity out of this from just one sighting, one subjective viewpoint. And I don't know, maybe there's a video coming out on this. Who knows? Maybe somebody filmed it. Who knows? I wouldn't doubt that this could be a setup for a video coming soon. I've got that funny feeling. New Fork seems to feel that this is a legitimate sighting, but again, we're going to have to wait and see if any other information becomes available. And if they get involved in researching this at all, it's just a shame that this happened so far out away from shore. Who knows? I mean, if somebody else saw this, something traveling that fast, though, that quick, who knows if anybody got a glimpse at that. So now ghost news. For this story, we're going to travel to the Lone Star State of Texas. And we're going to stay in the Gulf of Mexico. And this is kind of I don't want to say personal story, but one I can attest to because I've actually been to this location. Now, over the years, I spent a lot of time visiting a very good friend of mine, my close friend, Chris. He went to Texas A&M University, and I spent way too much time down in Texas and traveling all over the place down there. And one of my favorite places, besides College Station, of course, was Corpus Christi. Corpus has the Selena Memorial statue. I don't know if you know who she is, a famous singer. Mustang Island with beautiful beaches. that leads to South Padre Island, which, you know, all the kids know about that place. And the Texas State Aquarium is also right there in Corpus. And the aquarium is within walking distance of the USS Lexington Aircraft Carrier and Naval Museum. The aircraft carrier is a very unique experience. I've been on a couple of battleships. Here in Cleveland, we have the USS Cod, which is a submarine. Not for the faint of heart. If you're afraid of tight spaces, you might not want to go in there. But been on the USS North Carolina and all sorts of battleships and little and war ships and stuff all over the place. But this is the only aircraft carrier I've ever actually been on. It's very, very cool. It's very, very unique. It's also a naval museum. On the deck, they have F-16 Tomcats, Cobra attack helicopter, a Blue Angels plane. At least they did when I was there. I don't know. I was there a long time ago. And a lot of other historical aircraft on the deck as well as inside the aircraft carrier. It's a wonderful museum. If you love naval history, just aircraft in general or anything like this, it's worth going down there. And this World War II era ship has the nickname the Blue Ghost. And ever since I heard that, I thought, well, everyone's going to just think that that means that it's haunted. Well, the ship already, when I was down there, already had kind of a I actually heard a couple of ghost stories. I actually asked a few during our tour of that a couple came up. And I asked after that about some more information. And it's funny because I heard some of the same stories that they talk about during some of these interviews. The reason for the Blue Ghost, it's not because of haunted activity on the ship, but it's because five different ships shared the name USS Lexington, with one being built and renamed pretty much when the last one was sunk. The one before this one was very famous, and then this one was actually had a different name to it, and they essentially christened it the USS Lexington to continue on the name. And this name came from the Japanese, essentially. They thought that this thing kept coming back to life, that it, man, every time we sink it, she comes right back, which was kind of the plan. I think the United States kind of knew this and kind of fed into that folkloric attempt to explain things. Now, the ship had blue paint on it, kind of a bluish tinge, to help keep it camouflaged, which again helped lead it to its nickname of the Blue Ghost. Now, like any other historical object, the USS Lexington is rumored to be haunted. And like I said, when I was on board, I remember hearing a few stories, especially about full apparitions being seen. Rusty is the director of operations, and he's been on the job for over 20 years on the Lexi. And he states that there has been hundreds of sightings, and some people get so freaked out that they actually run off the ship. Well, of course, they paid already, so it doesn't matter. Now, the story in the news this week comes from a group of people that were filming in the ship when all of a sudden a door at the bottom of the roped-off stairway suddenly slammed shut. Now, what kind of irritated me was when I first started watching the video, I had to pause it, get up and walk around for a second. The person that was filming it was whistling at the time, like kind of how you'd whistle at a dog or a cat or something, you know, just to get its attention. And from what I took from this, they were just trying to invoke some sort of ghostly reaction from this. Now, Rusty, the director of operations, also shared his encounter of a door that was purportedly shaking violently, but no one was on the other side when he opened it. Well, that's a little different, Rusty, than a door just slamming shut. Now, in regards to this video, that coincidentally was shot over spring break, so I'm sure they might have been kicking back a few. I don't know. I'm not claiming that, but you never know what happens. People go to spring break, you know, for different reasons, to kind of unwind or to have fun or to, I don't know, shoot ghost videos on aircraft carriers from World War II. I don't know. Never crossed my mind, but to each his own. Now, the person filming it said that he'd never had a ghostly encounter. But again, the whistling sounded to me as if they were hoping that something would happen from that. Now, the ship is full of history. In some areas I'm telling you, they're very disorienting, very tight spaces, rooms and hallways that look extremely similar. And then you've got the low doorways, and you have to step into a room or you'll trip and fall. It's really just, it's disorienting to be on these ships, and you're surrounded by so much history. And with all the rumors of ghosts and the tour companies that litter the area, I mean, it's hard not to imagine someone jumping to the conclusion of a ghost over a slammed door like that. I mean, it would still freak me out. I don't think I would scream and drop my camera kind of like these people did, but I mean, come on. Do I think it's a ghost? No, probably not. Now, these ships, if you've ever been on any kind of ship, the air pressure works very differently than what you're used to. And if the air pressure would suddenly shift, or another door was opened, or a door was shut and created any kind of vacuum, it could easily slam a door, just like we saw in this video. And I'm thinking like cruise ship. If you've ever been on a cruise ship, if you've ever been on a cruise ship and you've had a balcony on your cruise ship, if you've ever left the balcony door open and try to open your cabin door, yeah, anything that's not bolted down is going to end up out in the ocean. It creates a windstorm that can suck just about anything and everything out of the room. And it can slam other people's doors, just like what happened here. So I'm thinking not a ghost, but just a video of air pressure in action and some slightly overstimulated people who, to me, were obviously looking for a ghost. And if you want to watch this spooky, scary video, guess what? I got the YouTube link right here, and you can check that out. Not sure why that didn't open. Well, you guys will figure it out. What do we got here? That's ghost news. Well, we got one more ghost news story, and it's a continuation from last week. If you tuned in last week, I talked about an article that was released by hauntedtheories.com. Interesting article where it talked about environmental sensitivity. Now, environmental sensitivity is not when you are concerned about people cutting down trees or anything like that. It's essentially where people who are extremely sensitive to environmental changes, which may create a reaction in the body that's typically not favorable, and can sometimes be very similar to when people experience ghosts, such as a feeling of being watched, nervousness, or other disturbing things. Now, the question with this part blog is, are those who claim to be environmentally sensitive prone to reporting more paranormal experiences? Now, hauntedtheories.com clarifies that this is not about psychics, sensitives, or mediums. As part one of the blog points out, quote, "I want to make it clear that environmental sensitivity is not related to psychic sensitivity. Those who claim to be psychic sensitives believe they can sense or communicate with the deceased, like John Edwards, Sylvia Brown, Chip Coffey. Those who are classified as environmentally sensitive are simply affected by the surrounding environment to a higher degree than the normal population," unquote. At the end of part one, we get a taste of the scientific study conducted by Brandon Masullo, the man behind the curtain, which was carried out at Mary King's Close in Edinburgh, Scotland. Mary King's Close is a series of underground areas that has existed since the 1600s and have been witness to a lot of history and are considered extremely haunted by this dynamic history. Ghost Hunters International, Most Haunted, and other paranormal television shows have investigated, or I guess filmed, at this location, cementing its statue or its status as a haunted location. Now, I put out the links last week, and if you took the time to read through them, especially the study, the actual work he did behind this, then you already know all the details. Now, if you didn't read it, I don't blame you. Some people can't read all that technical stuff. It's a little much sometimes. I get it. But I'll do my best to break it down for you. And got a couple more stories here tonight. Plus, you know, I wasn't going to do a book of the week, but I'm going to do the book of the week. And it's a ghost-themed book. tonight as well. Got probably the best story coming up here in a couple minutes. So if you only plan on hanging out with me for an hour, I get it. You can catch the rest of the show whenever you need to. But I'm going to keep going because I got some more stuff. But just remember that you're tuned into WCJV Digital Broadcasting from Youngstown, New York, emanating live at WCJVRadio.com. And you're listening to the Paranormal News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And we're still in the ghost world right now. And we're talking about this environmentally sensitive story that we started last week, part one. And I'm excited to bring you part two. And this study, again, if you haven't read it, I recommend it. But this blog will really break it down for you. It's got some pictures for those that don't like to read all this stuff. Some graphs that really really brings the stats to life. But a total of 251 people took part in the study that included 25 different sessions at Mary King's Close. Now, participants filled out a questionnaire prior to the tour of the location and indicated whether they were environmentally sensitive or not, and whether they have had previous ghost experiences. Now, at the end of the sessions, there were a total of 601 ghostly experiences reported. To see these in the breakdown, again, I'm going to refer you to check out the article that does have some nifty charts that kind of puts everything in perspective and explains all this. And the initial questionnaire, it was revealed that environmentally sensitive people involved in the study did report more than previous paranormal experiences than those who are not or claim to not be environmentally sensitive. And the second part of the study was to see if this information could be backed up against those who reported to be non-environmentally sensitive while touring the location. So actually being in a location that's purportedly haunted, how would that work out? Would that back up what these people said, the environmentally sensitive people that claimed that they see more stuff? Well, yeah, it did. It was incredible. It was the final report showed that those who consider themselves environmentally sensitive reported nearly twice as many experiences as those who were not sensitive. And there's a lot more details that go with this article. So again, if you have questions about this, they're more than likely answered within the further details of this blog post. And I highly recommend reading all through all this information. It's really extremely good information. And again, this was done scientifically. So this information, I mean, you could take it how you want it, but it might be onto something here. It might be onto something here that is just the beginning of more work to come. And again, that's at hauntedtheories.com. And when you go on there, you'll see all the blog links right there. This is the latest blog, so it's not going to be buried under some ghost story or anything like that. So you'll be able to find it really quick. And I do have, let me get in here, and I'll put the link there in the chat room so you can go directly to it. Although, again, if you go to hauntedtheories.com, it's right there. Now, my favorite story of the week. My goodness, this is it. And if you've not heard this story, my goodness, I can't even. This is incredible. And you've probably heard of the near-death experiences, and they have an effect on people who experience them. Obviously, they're dead and they come back to life. But beyond that, is that a pun? I guess. I don't know. You take it either way. According to one study, nearly 80% of those who died yet brought back to life felt changed after experiencing the event. A new zest for life, a larger spiritualism, typically accompany those who have had a near-death experience. It's a very interesting phenomenon that numerous studies and a lot of people are involved in. Still quite controversial. Obviously, scientists don't agree with this. There are other things that near-death experiencers go through, and sometimes they purportedly gain psychic abilities. Well, this next story, well, it goes there, And it comes from a source that I've never talked about ever. 8 years doing the Paranormal News Insider, I've never mentioned this place once. The headline makes it sound as though it comes from a scientific journal. From the one story that I got this news from, it reads, quote, "Woman claims she died and woke up with psychic abilities," unquote. Okay, sounds simple. But actually comes from a guy who does have a PhD in clinical psychology. He's an author. Okay, sounds legit, right? Sounds pretty good. And he got a start on the Oprah Winfrey Show. Okay, you might know who that is. Dr. Phil McGraw. Well, you probably know him as Dr. Phil, hosts his own show, and you might have heard of it. I don't know. Do you watch Dr. Phil? I don't. No offense, but I don't. Sorry. Well, Dr. Phil had a guest who had some, sensational claims. I guess that's a great way to put it. After she purportedly had a near-death experience. Now, her name, I don't know her whole name. It never really said in the story or the clips of the show that I saw. But she goes by Caden. Caden. Well, that's what she was called on the show, at least by Dr. Phil and her boyfriend, who is 24 years younger than her. Wow. Caden states, quote, "I died 15 years ago, and when I woke up, I had psychic abilities. God sent me back with a mission and some gifts," unquote. Okay, God sent her on a mission with some gifts. Well, I wonder if she knows the Blues Brothers. Okay, maybe you don't get that one. But the family of Matthew, the young man she is dating, they're a little skeptical of her purported abilities. I think as is Dr. Phil, as they feel that she is manipulating him. And the whole reason why they were on the show, you might wonder, is that Caden claims that she discovered psychically, of course, that Matthew was abused as a child. And the family completely denies this and says it's ludicrous. Now, at this point, this might sound a little bit more like Jerry Springer than Dr. Phil, but I used to watch that. I hate to admit that, but yeah, it was pretty cool. Now, she describes her abilities as, quote, and I quote, "I can speak French, I can write the Bengali alphabet, I can understand any foreign language, I have an effect on metal, so if I think things God doesn't want me to think about, he'll bend my metal. The craziest thing I know how to do is I can hear what people think before they speak. At nighttime, I have X-ray vision. I can see where people's old broken bones are. I can see basically the light of their skeleton. I also see spirits," unquote. Wait, the craziest thing she could do is hear what people think before they speak? I mean, I do that all the time. I'm fully aware of the mentality of some people. But she can write the Bengali alphabet? It's actually not that hard. She has X-ray vision, though. Man, I would love that. But it's only at night. I don't know how that would work. And she sees the bones of people essentially glowing through their skin. I think it would kind of creep me out. I still want that ability. Believe it or not, Bengali, I did some research on this, it's actually the seventh most spoken language behind Portuguese, Arabic, Hindi, English, Spanish, and Chinese. Huh. And it's spoken by 193 million people. And according to Wikipedia, it's the fifth most widely used writing system in the world due to its population. It's just a bunch of lines and squiggly marks, kind of like our language to some people. It's not that hard. Only 30 letters. Now, Dr. Phil decided to challenge Caden, but instead of making her try to understand a sentence in a foreign language or write a sentence in Pawnee, he went after her craziest gift and asked her to tell him what he was thinking at the moment. And I kind of knew this was going to happen. She completely caved under pressure. She began to blame the pressure of the situation, not being able to use this ability on command, as well as blame the family of her boyfriend, that it was just too difficult to do. And she just couldn't do it on command. And it just one excuse after another. And I was like, oh, come on. Now, one of the family members said, quote, oh, I'm sure it is. It's really difficult to do when people are looking at you and they can see completely through everything that's fake. Unquote. She sounded just like that, too. Just like that. And just when she was done saying that, the crowd erupted in applause and Caden slowly rolled her eyes. Well, Matthew was previously diagnosed with post-traumatic stress syndrome. And Caden, who's now become this savant, she's the smartest person in every room now because of her near-death experience. She feels that a lifetime of sexual abuse is the cause, and she has personally diagnosed him, Matthew that is, with what Dr. Phil read. Now, he read all these things that Caden wrote about herself. And this is so crazy. I have to remind you that this is a direct quote here. She diagnosed her boyfriend of 24 years younger than her with, quote, a new non-specified disorder called Hold Me in the House of Mirrors and Executive Syndrome, unquote. That's right. That's what he said. Well, that's what he read, again, from what Caden wrote down. A new non-specified disorder called Hold Me in the House of Mirrors and of Executive Syndrome, unquote. Smoke and mirrors. I don't know what she said. It's confusing. Well, throughout the episode, Dr. Phil also challenged her on her x-ray vision and her other abilities. And she both failed and became very defensive over and over and over again. I mean, I wanted to watch more Dr. Phil after that. I was like looking on to see if it was on Netflix or one of these online things. I want to watch Dr. Phil now. You know, wish Donahue was still on the air. Maybe I'll start watching Oprah. I don't know. But it was annoying. I really just from the 5-minute clip that I watched, this lady was just really digging herself a hole. I don't think that she has psychic abilities. And I never really had much faith in Dr. Phil, but after watching this, I think he's a pretty cool guy. I really do. Dr. Oz, on the other hand, anyway, well, that's for a different show, I guess. And while I'm on the ghost news, I've got one more story, but I want to throw out the book of the week here real quick. I had another book in mind for the book of the week here, a book that I just wrapped up reading not too long ago. And it's on ghosts, but there's a lot to it. And I didn't want to shortchange it on a night where there was just so many stories. I don't want to bury it. So I'm going to talk about one of my books that I kind of forgot about until recently. Somebody told me that they bought this book. And I guess it's not really one of the books that comes to my mind. It was actually... Initially, I wrote this nice big book and tried to get it published way back in 2008, 2009. Nobody wanted it. So I discovered self-publishing, online publishing. And I went to publish this book and found out that it would cost the reader about 30 some odd dollars to buy this book. And I thought, no way, no one's going to buy this thing. So I had to kind of cut it up, chop it up into pieces. You know, seal parts of it in plastic and bury it in the river, whatever I had to do. I had to chop it into little bits of edible pieces and kind of essentially republish it through my own online publishing company, which is lulu.com. And the first book was pretty good, what I wanted, but there was a lot of stuff that I had to unfortunately pull out of this book, which went on to become two other books. And one of the books that I call a companion book to the first book is the book of the week this week, and it's actually called Betty's Ghost, A Guide to Paranormal Investigation. And again, it's what I consider a companion book to the first book because it pretty much picks up where that book leaves off, and it's also kind of the information there is well, that didn't work. It picks up where kind of the investigation piece ends. And what it is essentially a kind of a well, it is a guide. And what it was originally, it was a thing that I wrote up for my researchers and investigators just to show them how I kind of go through a case. It's kind of a what I call over the shoulder look at how I investigate a case, and allows the reader to kind of follow along in a fictitious story that I created just for this, you know, just for a training tool, essentially is what it started out as. And I wanted to share that with other people. You know, why hold everything a secret? Why keep everything to yourself? And to teach, to train is an important thing. And that's what the goal of this book is, to pass on some of the knowledge and information. Thank you, Dita. I was trying to struggle to get that. The book cover is now up on there. And Betty's Ghost, again, it was actually just a chapter in the initial first kind of edition of my handbook, The Amateur Paranormal Investigator or Ghost Hunter. But I expanded it to write for this. It's only 65 pages. It's pretty large writing. There's not a whole lot of chunk to it, of a lot of stuff to it. But it, again, it is a over-the-shoulder view of how I would investigate a typical case. Now, it's not paranormal. There's nothing typical. I mean, we get a lot of cases that are very similar, but every case is a little bit different. But with Betty's Ghost, you kind of get a feel for how you would approach certain things with this and some of the sensitive things that you have to go through. And it shows the communication that goes between a ghost investigator, a case manager, whatever you want to call it, and the client. And it's kind of like an email format. Do people still email? I don't know. You could consider it a phone call as well. I recommend more phone calls. But I thought it was a good book to kind of show someone who wants to get into a team or is not sure how to approach investigating other than what they see on television, kind of give it a little bit of a different way. And this was well before I created the pharmacy. This book was published years ago, almost 9 years ago, August 31st, 2008. So it's been around for a while. And things have evolved for me in the ghost field quite a bit. And but this is, again, it's a really nice view of how to approach just your kind of normal case. And there is some pretty good information in this as far as how to do field work and things. Not so in depth on the interview part, because that was kind of covered in the first book. And so this was the second book, technically, I guess, I ever wrote. So Betty's Ghost, A Guide to Paranormal Investigation. And you may wonder who wrote that. Well, I wrote that. Brian D. Parsons is on the front of the book. Is your book of the week this week? And it feels weird talking about my own book. It's just so weird to make my book the book of the week. That's the only third book. So I have, I guess, two more coming. I was thinking about this the other day. Ben Radford has three books of the week, and I only had two, the two that I wrote. So I thought, well, I better catch up. And I think Lloyd has three too. So I had to throw mine in there eventually. So one last story. This happened in other news. I'm not going to put it in UFO news, although it could be. You may have seen this story too, that the pictures are floating around. The story is a little confusing because it's two or three of these stories kind of conflict with each other. And this has to do with three giant rings. No, it's not a quest to find something in this faraway land. But they've appeared near Carmen de Areco, which is close to Buenos Aires in Argentina. Now, the article in the Daily Star website says, quote, "Incredible mystery crop circles appear overnight, leaving scientists baffled," unquote. Of course, they're baffled. Any kind of story like this says that people are baffled. Anytime you see that, there's probably a logical solution to this. Now, this article in the Daily Star says that there were 15 circles, but there's only three. I mean, I wasn't there, but all the photographs and all the other descriptions I've seen state only three. Now, Scott C. Waring, who in this article is said to be a, quote, UFO expert, unquote, Well, he's actually the web host of the UFO Sightings Daily website, which, I mean, I'll call it like I see it. It's full of clickbait stories and photographs of monkeys on Mars. And he was the guy that said, yeah, he found the missing flight MH370 sitting at the bottom of the ocean, fully intact. And I'll say it. I don't care. I know a lot of people listen to the show, but maybe I'll stir the pot here. I don't care. He's essentially a guy that spends too much time behind his computer. I mean, really. Now, Waring says about these crop circles, quote, "The circles appear deep and down to the dirt as if burnt by radiation. This could be the landing place of a UFO that frequently passes by and each time leaves a mark in the shape of the bottom of the craft," unquote. I mean, okay. Okay. It could be. I mean, it could be, you know, the USS Enterprise. It could be, it could be ET. I mean, it could be anything. Sure. Okay. We'll go along with that. Now, the mayor of Carmen de Areco was the first person at the scene back on March 17th. And, well, he did what any smart mayor would do. He invited some UFO experts to investigate. And hopefully this is where science comes in, because soil samples have been sent out to the agronomy department of the University of Buenos Aires. Agronomy. Well, agronomy is the science of soil management and crop production. And I think that's a good move. I think that's a smart move to have the soil analyzed and the plant material analyzed, because my guess, it's probably some sort of fungus. It's, you should always, when you're looking at a situation like this, you know, think of the most logical solution, because usually, according to a guy named Occam, it's usually the correct one. And to jump to the conclusion that, well, we got some little circles burnt in the grass, it's got to be a UFO. Well, that's a little crazy. I mean, why jump to that conclusion? I'm sure Scott's a nice guy. I don't know. I'm just saying. I just think it's a little crazy. And, you know, I guess we got to make a living somehow. We got to get our attention somehow. For me, it's been here on the show and telling you guys the truth behind these stories each and every week right here on the Paranormal News Insider, because that's what I like to do. I like to help you guys out. I like to bring some light to these dark stories and bring the information to the surface from the inside. You know, no matter where this data takes us, that's where we're going to go. And if it does happen to be some wild man in the woods and not a fake video, I'm going to admit it. It's pretty rare that I'm going to side with the paranormal side. I know, sounds skeptical, but we have to be skeptical. We have to be skeptical of these stories because they're not always true. Not always true. But thank you for hanging in with me on an extra long night. I got to go to bed, kids, man. I got to go to bed. I need my beauty sleep. So, yeah, with that, I don't know if you guys were in the chat room. If you guys remember, last week I did this pretty cool little thing in there. I got another one for you. So if you're in the chat room, you're missing out here. I'm going to throw this little guy in there. And, yeah, with that, huge thanks to Cindy, my producer, for making me sound much better than I really am. To Dita and everybody in the chat room, Paul, thank you, sir, for all the hard work that you do, especially Dita, the senior advisor. Got to make sure I mention that. And everyone else for tuning in, whether you're live or you're listening on an archive, I really appreciate it. This has been, the course of the last few months, the show is continuing to gain more and more listeners. And I really, really appreciate that. It means so much to me that so many people are listening to this show. And again, I don't want to brag about numbers or throw stuff out there. I mean, the show is still growing. And as long as it's still growing, I'm excited to bring it to you. And the day that only one listener shows up, well, fine. Then I'm talking to one listener. But I'm really happy to bring you the show. And it's breaking records each month for the amount of listeners that that we get on this show. So I appreciate that. And with that, keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck, And always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.
Listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.